This week's parsha is Vayigash. As I was reviewing the parsha the last 2 days, I was troubled by what I feel is like a most fundamental question that I never really thought of before, but it really bothered me. And that is, this week's parsha is very powerful. It's the climax of the entire story. With Yosef and the and his brothers, all the tension and everything that is not known, and the personalities and the turmoil that exists in Yaakov, it all comes to a head with this confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef, and Yosef ultimately are breaking down. And revealing himself, the famous words, "Ani Yosef, Ha'od Abichai," is my father is still alive. And that, as a side, is a major question everyone's bothered by. What does he mean? What is he asking? Is my father still alive? But in any event, Yosef reveals himself and says, "Don't worry, hey, you sold me to Egypt, but everything was God's plan." And so what I was bothered by is that going back to the beginning of the story, when the tensions first start, and there's animosity and ill will between Yosef and the brothers, ostensibly it comes to a head, and it gets to the point where ultimately the brothers are so enraged that they sell Yosef over Yosef's dreams. And he shares these dreams, and they it really troubles them. What are you telling us? You're going to rule over us? But the question is, like, at the end of the day, what was the point of those dreams? Why did Yosef need to be shown those dreams of the sheaves bowing, their sheaves bowing down to his sheaf, the sun, moon, and the stars bowing down to him? We mentioned in last week's Parsha class the Ramban's opinion and approach that everything that Yosef was doing with the brothers, not writing home, telling his father that he was alive, imprisoning Shimon and making sure that Binyamin would be brought back, and ultimately that Yaakov would come down to Egypt as well, was all in order to fulfill those dreams, right? He had to orchestrate everything in order to guarantee that, in fact, the 11 brothers would bow down to him. Not only would his brothers bow down to him, but his father would bow down to him as well. And we spoke about how sometimes we have to be proactive, that we're given visions, and we're given jobs, responsibilities, and we have to make it happen. But the question is, what here was necessary? What changed the fact that Yosef was revealed that he would be in some sort of leadership position, that his brothers would bow down to him? Like, how did that impact him in any way? Why did he have to be shown? It was, you could have just said that the brothers were jealous, and the father gave Yosef the coat of many colors, and as a result they got jealous of him, and he was sold to Egypt, and eventually they came down, they bowed down to him. Like, why did he need to know in advance that this was going to happen? As opposed to, as we also mentioned last week, we talked about Rivka and Rivka being shown a being told about the why she was having a difficult pregnancy, right? Lidos as Hashem, she approaches a God. She is somehow she's told that this pregnancy that she's having, there's actually there's two children within her, and the younger one is going, or the older one is ultimately going to serve the younger one. So there, one could argue the reason why she is told that prophecy is because she needs to act upon it, right? She's gonna when her father, when her husband, when Yitzchak desires to give a bracha to Esav, well, she knows and know that Yaakov is the one who really needs to be in charge of the family, and therefore she needs to do whatever she has to do in order to make sure to manipulate things that will occur. So she's told, given this prophecy, in order for her to act. But in this instance, why is Yosef given these dreams? What do they? How do they benefit him? What is he supposed to do with them? What is he being told? What? How does it help him that he that otherwise, without him being told these dreams, somehow you know, things wouldn't progress the way they need to progress. So that's the question that was bothering me the last two days. And so I'd like to share with you maybe just two or three approaches that I saw, that I heard. So one just comes from the Medrash. So the Medrash says that all this, at the end of the day, was a manipulation by God. That after all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God had told Avram, Yado Teida, you shall surely know, Kiger Yezaracha, that your children will be strangers in a strange land. We invoke this pasuk at the Seder for Parshas Nachacha. And God had to make this occur, happen. And therefore, it says the Medrash Tanchuma, Bishvil Ketonas Pasim Gar L'chol Shvatan Leirat Mitzrayim. It was because that coat of many colors that's why ultimately the family went down to Egypt. Amar Rabbi Yudin HaYakadosh Baruch Hu Mevakeh Shekayim Gezeiros Yado Teida. Now is the time to fulfill this promise to Avram that your children will be strangers in a strange land. And he somehow had to manipulate things. God had to manipulate things so that is what actually happened. That the family would ultimately descend to Egypt and begin the slavery. And therefore, it required that Yaakov would love Yosef more than all the brothers. And as a result, the brothers would hate him. And there'd be these series of dreams that would just increase the jealousy. And ultimately, he would be sold to the Ishmaelim. And he'd be brought down to Egypt. And Yaakov would hear that there'd be a famine, and then ultimately he would send the sons, and then Yosef would reveal himself, and then Yaakov would want to go down to Egypt to see that Yosef was alive, and ultimately then they would be enslaved. And so the whole process and all these events were sort of, you know, God behind the scenes, you know, with the puppets, you know, sort of making things happen in order to for these events to occur. Ultimately, for the Jewish people to become a nation, initially as slaves in Mitzrayim in Egypt. This is an approach that's suggested by the Medrash. Okay, and it's an interesting, you know, it's definitely an approach. But I just want to strengthen my question to add one more element to all this, and that is the following. Again, my question is: what was the point of the dreams, and what occurs in the dreams that the brothers and Yaakov, right, the sun and the moon bowed down to him, and seemingly that symbolized that Yosef is going to be the leader, right, the ruler over them. They're going to bow down to him. But we know in Jewish history that who becomes the ultimate leader of the family? It's not Yosef; it's rather it's Yehuda. Right, and in next week's parsha, Yaakov explicitly appoints Yehuda to be the leader of the people. The pasuk says when he's blessing his children on his deathbed, comes to Yehuda. Lo yasu shevim Yehuda, right? The scepter shall not depart from Yehuda. Mechokek mibein raglav. That Yehuda is going to be the ultimate leader of the Jewish people, right? The Davidic dynasty is going to descend from Yehuda, ultimately the Mashiach. Right? Mashiach ben David is going to emerge from the tribe of Yehuda. And what's interesting is that I saw the Ramban mentions that initially the first king actually was not from Yehuda. Shaul was from the family of Rachel, right? He's from Binyamin, Yosef's brother, and the Ramban asks, how could it be? How could Shaul be the first king? I thought the kings were supposed to come from Yehuda, and the Ramban just suggests, well, maybe it was a punishment to the Jewish people. They inappropriately asked for a king, so they were given Shaul initially, but that wasn't going to be a kingdom that was going to endure, that was going to last. But ultimately, David would be appointed. And that would be the kings for all our future generations. So if that's the case, so Yosef, you know, the brothers bowing down to Yosef. So that happened at just one small moment in history, right? When when they came to Egypt and Yosef is now second in command and they bow down. Okay, so they have to be second in command in Egypt. They don't know who he is and they bow down to him. But again, but why does Yosef need to know that in advance? Like, why is that so important that that needs to be revealed to Yosef? So again, according to the Medrash, it's all about the jealousy. It's all about Hashem pulling the strings and ensuring that, you know, that this whole all these events are going to unfold, that are going to enable eventually the family to all come down, and then the servitude to begin. But is there anything else? So I got stuck today. So what did I do? Of course, I asked my wife. And so Dina, what do you think? So my wife had Dina had the following suggestion, and that is, ultimately, and this we've also discussed in the past, that at this stage in the development of the Jewish people, that this was the first time in the past few generations that there wasn't going to be a split within the family. Right, until this point, Avram has two children. Ki Yitzchak Yikareizu Zara, that Yitzchak was the one that was chosen, and it was not Yishmael. Yitzchak has Yaakov and Esav. It's Yaakov is chosen, and it's not Esav. At this point, there's 12 sons, and all of them are going to be become the Jewish people. Right, each one is going to be critical. Each one is going to be necessary. But what happens, you know, at this moment? So initially, Yaakov seems to favor Yosef, and I saw the Netziv suggest that the reason why he favors Yosef, some say this based upon the simple explanation of the pasuk, he favors or he loves Yosef because he's the ben zikunim, she's the child born to him in his old age. He's the one who's tending to his needs. The other brothers are older now. They're working. They're tending to the flock, and he has this natural attachment to the one who's home with him. Binyamin's still a very little child. Yosef is old enough to be able to assist his father. So he develops this affinity, this very strong connection to Yosef. The Netziv, however, suggests that there must have been something within Yosef himself that Yaakov saw as a strength, as something that he felt was very critical and important. Not that he was rejecting the other brothers, not that he didn't recognize that each brother had their own strengths. And we see that he recognizes all the brothers' strengths and qualities and these final blessings that he gives to them on his deathbed. But rather, at this juncture, suggests in the Netziv, he sees within Yosef, although he's very impressionable and he's apparently likes, he's focused on his looks, we're told, but he sees something very spiritual within him. He sees this inner strength within him that Yosef uniquely has more than the brothers. And as a result, he has this love towards him, is this affinity towards him. And he tries to one can suggest that he tries to nurture it, and it's going to become necessary. And we see, after all, it is critical for Yosef, right? Yosef becomes a slave in Egypt, and he's in this foreign land. And we know that we know from past experience in Sefer Bereishis that when you get thrown into Egypt, it's a good question whether you're going to come back out unscathed, right? Lot, who goes down to Avram to Egypt, Lot is forever changed from that experience, right? He was walking hand in hand with Avram until that point, and seems to be when Avram has no children that Lot is going to take over, but when Avram and Sarah emerge from Egypt, we're told Lot imo anegba, he stole towards the south. He was he became very much attracted to the culture, to the value system in Egypt. Eventually, him and Avram split, and he goes to Sodom, and everything falls apart with Lot. And now with Yosef having to go down to Mitzrayim, there's a huge danger. What's going to be? Is he going to lose the values of the household? And he has to be strong. And he faces the challenge with the wife of Potiphar. And then he has to live all those years in Egyptian society, and he rises to such a prominence. And he has to be strong, and he is strong, Right, and Yaakov recognizes this within him. Right? Yaakov sees this, and he's able to withstand therefore all those pressures and temptations when he's in Egypt. The brothers all misinterpret what's happening, right? And the brothers view it as a favoritism towards Yosef, perhaps even a rejection of them. Right, and maybe this is sort of repeating what has occurred in the past, that that Yosef, similar to his father before him and his grandfather Yitzchak and Yaakov, that there's going to be splits within the family. They're going to be rejected, and therefore, what happens? Here's Adina's suggestion. What happens is God gives Yosef these dreams, and in these dreams, Yosef is, you know, the brothers are bowing down to Yosef. And Yaakov is bowing down to Yosef, and then and again it increases the animosity and the hatred, and then they sell him, right? Then they want to get rid of him, and then the whole story unfolds, and then to our parsha, what occurs? So Yosef finally reveals himself, right? Ani Yosef od avichai. And the brothers at first they can't respond, and he says. Then he says, he's like giving it to them, right? I'm your brother. I'm your Asher Mechartem Osi Mitzrayim. You sold me to Egypt, right? Oh no, like he's going to really give it to them. But then he says something very powerful. The Atah now. And so at this point, maybe he's going to get rid of them. He's going to kill them. He's going to destroy them. He's going to, like, the family is forever going to, you know, fall apart. He says, the Atah al Teatzvu. But don't be sad. You have nothing to be fear. That you sold me here. Because God has orchestrated everything. Because there's been these years of famine. It's going to continue for another 5 years. But God has put me here in order to cause you to live, and that things shall emerge, will emerge unscathed. And so at this point, the brothers perhaps are able to accept everything, because now they see that this was always a divine plan, right? Things now make sense to them. That now the dreams that Yosef had once told them, well, God had orchestrated it, right? God had been the one who had appeared to Yosef in those dreams and had told Yosef that, you know, you're going to be you're going to be standing there, and they're bow down to them. In other words, what Adina was suggesting is that, you know, so often in life, especially when real difficulties or tragedies occur, it's so hard for us to accept. It's so hard for us to see the hand of God in things, and to recognize that maybe there's some plan that, you know, that we can't perceive, but that God is there behind the scenes. And therefore often leads to doubt and to questioning and to a lot of ill will and bad feelings and resentment. And that could have occurred here with the story of with Yosef and the brothers, that had that they not been given a sign and understood that this was all God's plan, and that Yosef was placed there for a reason, and that this all had to unfold the way that they did in order for everything to emerge and to follow through, it could have torn the family apart. It could have they could have never have been able to fully accept Yosef. Yosef, you're now over us. You're now the one, you know, who's been to such a power in Egypt, that aren't we supposed to be equal? Are we all supposed to be partners? Isn't this this period of selection over? That you know, we're no longer going to be dropping, you know, one person from the family, but we're all in this together. The whole thing could have fallen apart at this moment. Therefore, God had to give Yosef these dreams. Yosef had to share it with the brothers, although they didn't understand initially why it was being told and why Yosef was sharing it. Was in order that fast forward all those years later, they all can say, oh, this was God's plan all along, that this was all necessary. For this moment in time, Yosef needs to be the leader. He's the right person, as the Netziv suggests. He had the spiritual fortitude to be able to survive all that time in Egypt and to allow for the divine plan to work its way through. But it's all going to work out. We're all in this together because this is what God has ordained. This is how God is allowing things to occur and to unfold. So that's interesting. That's Athena's suggestion as to why the dreams had to occur, why Yosef had to reveal them to the brothers. And often, unfortunately, we're not privy to God's plans. And for us, it's obviously there's a lot of pain and suffering in life, and we have a lot of questions. And for us, it's left to just to believe and to hope that God, sort of behind the scenes, is orchestrating events, and there is some plan. But here, the brothers, early on in the formation of the family, apparently this was critical for them to know this was all being orchestrated by God. So that's another suggestion. I'd just like to conclude with one final thought. So in addition to asking Adina her thoughts on this, I also threw this out on my rabbinic WhatsApp chat today. And I actually got a response from an older friend of mine, Rabbi Benjamin Zimmerman, who's an educator in Israel. And he didn't have a direct answer for this, but he had an approach of Soloveitchik that I think perhaps can shed light on this. Again, just one more time. The question that's bothering me is, why was Yosef given these dreams? What changed, what was impacted by the fact that Yosef was given these dreams? The fact that the brothers bowed down to him, that was going to happen anyway, right? If you can argue that maybe the jealousy of the coat of many colors was enough for them to have wanted to have gotten rid of them. And okay, so they eventually would have come down to Egypt. He would have become second in command. They didn't know who they were, who he was. They would have bowed down to him. Like, why did Yosef need to know these dreams in advance? Unlike Rivka, who I'm suggesting needed to know that the older one would serve the younger one in order for her to guarantee that Yaakov would get the bracha and not Esav, why was it necessary for Yosef to know about this in advance? How did that change anything? And furthermore, that ultimately, is this just a dream in a temporary moment? At this very one moment that Yosef is second in command in Egypt, the brother's going to bow down to him? Or is this a dream about the future of the Jewish people? And ultimately, Yosef is going to be in this position of he's going to emerge as a leader of the people. But the problem with that is that's not the case, right? That Yehuda was going to be the ultimate leader of the Jewish people, right? That David HaMelech, the Davidic dynasty and Mashiach. And we know that Yosef plays some sort of role always within the Jewish people. There's a split of the kingdoms after the death of Shlomo. There's a tribe of Ephraim, and that's the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom is Yehuda, but it seems to be not the ideal. It seems to be ultimately what we want them all to come back together. The prophecies of Yirmiyahu and other prophets are that they're ultimately going to come back together. But the leader is always going to be Yehuda, right? The Davidic dynasty. And there's also this idea, and it's brought down in one or two Gemaras about a sort of a partnership of Mashiach, Ben Yosef, and we don't know exactly what that means. But again, the ultimate leader is not Yosef. The ultimate leader is Yehuda. And therefore, what is the point of these dreams? So the Rabbi Zimmerman pointed me to an article that Rabbi Soloveitchik, one of his drushas, he wants to deliver it. It's a sefer that was published, Chamesh Drushos, five homilies of Soloveitchik, where Rabbi Soloveitchik was commenting on the content of the dream. Specifically, there's actually three dreams. The first dream, we don't know what it is, right? He doesn't actually tell us what the first dream is. We know the third dream is the sun, moon, and the stars bowing down to him. The second dream is the sheaves in the field, right? There's 12 sheaves are all together. Then 11 get up and they bow down to the other one, which represents Yosef. So first of all, Rav Hirsch says the following. Rav Hirsch says it is remarkable that he should have dreamt of binding sheaves. The fact that Yosef was dreaming of sheaves of wheat is something to really cause us to pause. Why? Because that was something with which they ordinarily had no connection. Because what were the jobs of the family until this point? Says the first, they were shepherds. Right? Avram was a shepherd. Yitzchak, Yaakov, the brothers, right? They're shepherding the flock. Right? Yaakov tells Yosef to go find the brothers. They're shepherding the flock. Becoming an agricultural people was still only their destiny in the distant future. Right? Eventually, when the Jews enter Israel, that's when we become become farmers. If agriculture was so much in his mind that he even dreamt of it, the brothers were justified in thinking that this could only be due to the teaching and information given to him by his father, Yisrael, regarding the expected national destiny of the family. All the more then could the brothers believe themselves justified in saying, will you indeed in the future be king over us? Perhaps even now rule over us? How do you know we're going to become farmers? We're now shepherds. Right, it must be there's some sort of jealousy that the brothers feel that maybe Yaakov has told Yosef about what the what's going to change in the future. And Soloveitchik added the following: he said biblical Joseph was not persuaded that Jacob dwelt in the land of his father's wanderings. Right, the whole story begins Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megurei Aviv Eretz Kanan. Yaakov, after everything that happened with Rachel and Leah and Esav and Lavan, his uncle, he finally comes back to the land of Israel and he's living with his father, and which Soloveitchik interprets, he's now going to continue the family legacy. He's going to engage in the same profession as the family. And we've talked about this in the past, especially when it comes to Cain and Hevel, about right that Cain is the one who brings the sacrifice from the from agriculture, while it's Hevel who brings it from animals, from sheep, a korban, right? And we talked about how what is the ideal way to live? Is it to be the shepherd or to be a farmer? And one could argue that it's the shepherd which is the ideal way to live. That it basically gives you a lot of freedom and opportunity to think and to reflect and to philosophize and to study, to be the Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Alim, to be the dweller in the tent, and not to be, the Esav, and not to be the Cain who's out in the field and is working day and night, right? It's a lot of work and a lot of effort to be a farmer. And also when you're successful, you might think it's all because of me, Kochi V'Yotzim Yadi, I'm the one who did this, and you can forget God. And so, Yosef is, and so the brothers, the family's assuming, what should you do for your life? You should be in Kollel, right? You should learn Torah all day long. And you should be a one, to only engage in spiritual pursuits. But says with Soloveitchik, Yosef was not convinced that that was going to be the manner which the Jewish people always were going to exist. It was not going to last. The word says with Soloveitchik that your seed shall be strangers in alien land, right? When God tells Avram, Kiger Yezrachal, you'll be strangers in a strange land, that kept tolling in his ears. He saw himself and his brothers in an alien environment. Yosef was able to look to the future and see that we're not always going to be in the land of Canaan. We're going to be far from it in a new circumstance, under new conditions of life. In his dream, he saw, behold, we are binding sheaves. We are no longer in Canaan. We're in the land of Egypt, and we can no longer be shepherds. We are integrated into a new economy with new styles of living, characteristics, and laws. And basically, says Soloveitchik, he dreamt of a new framework within which the unity of the family could be preserved. Even the far-flung places where the creator of the universe would scatter them, his constant preoccupation was with the continuation of Abraham's tradition amidst a new economic structure and civilization. Can a Jew survive in exile? Can a Jew adapt to new circumstances? Can a Jew live a life connected to God, even if you're not in the embryonic environment of the desert, of standing at the foot of Mount Sinai, with your animals, and have the opportunity to hear the voice of God? But rather, you're in the land, and you need to work the land, and it takes a lot of effort and toil, and it's requires you to be there from sunrise to sunset. Can a Jew survive in such an environment. And we've talked about in the past that there's so many laws in the Torah that that help the farmer to recognize God. That there's going to be a Shabbos and a Shemitah. That there's laws of Yovel and there's all the laws of Orla and Demai and Maaser and Truma and Bikurim and all these different things to help keep you focused and on your priorities and your values and helping out those in need and those the less fortunate and connecting you to your Shemayim and to the base of the Mikdash and the But it's a challenge. And Yosef was able to see and to recognize that this is something that we're going to have to be able to adapt to. And so I want to then take it a step further and therefore say, so what was the dream all about? And what was the tension that Yosef was thinking about these things? Right? Yosef was saying that we're not always going to be here. There's going to be a time when as God has already preordained to Abram, they're going to be strangers in a strange land, and the brothers perhaps didn't want to hear that. But the point of the dream, what God was saying, is that Yosef is right, that your she's are going to bow down to me. Ultimately, you're going to admit and you're going to recognize that my approach is not only that it's going to happen, but it's necessary and it can work. It can become successful, that we can figure things out, that there'll be a way to maintain our identity even in Egypt, even in foreign places, and even in Israel where we're gonna have to work the land, where we're still gonna be able to maintain the values of our forefathers, that we'll still be able to be shepherds in the sense of the values of the shepherd. But we can do it as farmers as well, and so perhaps the point of these dreams, according to this, is not showing that Yosef is going to be the ultimate leader of the Jewish people, because that's Yehuda, Yehuda's going to be the ultimate leader, but Yosef's predictions and Yosef's encouragement and Yosef's philosophy and Yosef's attitude. That's going to be what's ultimately is going to guide the Jewish people. That approach and that directive and that vision and that ability to recognize and to create, to set the tone for what will be and to make sure that it's going to be successful, that's what Yosef was going to able to demonstrate to the brothers. And Yosef does that so powerfully and beautifully through his experience in Egypt. Right, that he does remain committed, right? The names that he gives his children, Manasseh and Ephraim, reflect that he recognizes that this is not the ideal location, but that I know who I am. I know where I come from. I know my identity. I know who my parents are. My household is. I can remain committed as a Jew and committed to those values. That a Jew, no matter where they are, that they can navigate those challenging moments. So Yosef had to be shown that for himself. He had to recognize that he in Egypt would be able to endure, and that for the family as a whole moving forward. That's what I want to suggest. Not only is this vision that's given to him something for just the immediate future for himself, but it's the It's the game plan for the entire Jewish people moving forward. It's the spiritual path that we're going to take throughout our journey throughout history. And if that's the case, then what emerges is that these dreams are critical, and the brothers misunderstand them initially. Right? They have to the brothers misunderstand the point. Perhaps they disagree with it initially, that they don't think that he's correct. And the way he view things, but ultimately they recognize that it is the correct approach, that it is the path forward, and that sets the tone for them in Egypt, and ultimately for us as a people, no matter where we find ourselves, whether in the land of Israel or in exile in the lands that we've been throughout our long history, that we're able to remain strong and committed as Jews, because we can figure it out wherever we are. Right, whatever the circumstances are, as difficult as they are, we can remain committed Jews. We can be those farmers that are working those long hours, and you know, not knowing what the future will bring, and under very harsh conditions, but still remain true to our values. And therefore, this the story is a lesson not only in the initial formation of the Jewish people, but it's a lesson and it's a guide for how we are to live our lives throughout our history. Okay, hope that made sense. Again, this question really bothered me as to what was the point of these dreams. And again, these three different approaches of the Medrash, the one Adina shared that I thought was really nice, this other approach based upon Rav Hirsch and Rav Soloveitchik about the future destiny of the Jewish people. Hope everyone has a very meaningful fast tomorrow, Sar B'Teves, and a very enjoyable, safe and healthy Shabbos. See you all, everyone.